with Radio Freedom Anarchy on the airwaves on Community Radio 2XX 98.3 FM. That track was from Ignite and was called Holding On. Before that we were listening to Joe Toscano and his many varied guests on the Anarchist World this week from 3CR in Melbourne, and that comes courtesy of the Community Radio satellite. Well, last Monday was May Day. The Trades and Labour Council may have forgotten that, and they obviously decided last Saturday was May Day, but I think we don't hold out much hope for them anymore. But why is May Day an important date in the historical and current calendar of many activists, whether anarchist, whether just general sort of...
Everyone. Everyone from radicals to your base trade unions.
Base trade... Oh, gee, that's... we're going to get plenty of people abusing us for that one, but basically May Day, historically, if you want to take it back to last century, seeing we're talking about things from the previous century before, and okay, I'll say the 1800s, because some person's going to ring up and say last century was the 1900s and everything I'm about to say is wrong, so let me just say the 1800s. And basically in the 1880s, in the United States and Canada, there was a very much an ongoing struggle for improved working conditions, and one of those working conditions they sought to improve was the length of the working day. And so in 1884, the Federation of Organized Trades and Labor Unions of the United States and Canada, which is known today as the American Federation of Labor, which is now known as American Federation of Labor - something something something, whose name just escapes me for the moment, which is sort of these days the equivalent of the Australian Council of Trade Unions, but back then was certainly very much a more radical organisation. In 1884, they passed a resolution asserting an 8-hour day shall constitute a day's work, and they put a deadline for that of May the 1st, 1886. And so in support of that, there was put out a call for strikes on May the 1st, 1886, and they were sort of fairly universally supported across the United States and Canada. But one place in particular where they are... happened on a rather large scale was Chicago. And in Chicago, the union movement was quite militant, the organised labour movement quite militant, and certainly a lot of anarchists and communists and others of that ilk were very active in the labour movement in Chicago, and were sort of one of the main pushers for a strike on May the 1st and around May the 1st, and for the 8-hour day. But they didn't see it, the 8-hour day as the be-all and end-all, as the Federation of Labour might have. They saw it only as part of a broader struggle for an immediate improved labour conditions, and obviously the eventual goal of an anarchist society, but they were one of the main pushers. So on May the 1st, right across America and Canada, but particularly in Chicago, what we'll be focusing on here, was a rather large strike in Chicago. This is obviously one of these figures that gets very settled to typos, because I've seen it represented as 400,000 and 40,000 in several various different sources, so let's just say a lot. The vast majority of workers in Chicago were on strike for several days around and including May the 1st, and a large number of workers were actually awarded the 8-hour day without going on strike, simply because their bosses obviously realised that it's far better to have people working 8 hours a day than not working at all. And who said bosses were stupid, but a large number of people were awarded the 8-hour day. Just the very threat of strike action was enough for those bosses to cave in. We won't say they awarded it, they just caved in, they lost. They were forced into giving an 8-hour day. We never say the bosses give things, the bosses don't give things. They get dragged, begging, dragged, screaming to give things. But anyway, on May the 3rd, outside a company known as the McCormick Harvester Machine Company, and no prizes for guessing what they happened to manufacture. Anyway, there was a picket outside there, and the police, for whatever reason, decided to fire on that picket. One person was killed, many more injured. And the next day, May the 4th, a mass meeting was held at Haymarket Square in Chicago, basically as a protest against the police action at the McCormick Harvester Machine Co. picket, and just to sort of organise a response to that. As the meeting finished, about 200 police turned up at Haymarket with the sole pretense of breaking up the meeting. Finding the meeting had broken up, then...
I think it was due to rain, actually. It sort of started to rain all day, so people just started to
go home. And so the police found this a bit unfortunate, but as the meeting...
Well, in all their bravery, they decided, hey, you know, we'll wait till everyone leaves and then we'll pick on the stragglers.
And as the meeting was breaking up, a bomb was thrown into the police lines. Now, there is very much a contention of where this bomb was actually thrown from, and pretty much the general consensus is that the police were responsible for that bomb being thrown, or whether it was the police themselves or someone they just paid to do it. It certainly did not come from the crowd. And so the police waded in into the crowd, beat up lots of people, may have killed people, but that's not really confirmed. Certainly a lot of people were quite severely injured as they reined in. And under the pretext of trying to find this alleged bomber, and in the aftermath, a few days afterwards, there was a massive crackdown on radicals, labour movement in Chicago, basically people being arrested on a variety of bogus pretexts, which just goes to show the more things change, the more they stay the same. Sort of the premises of unions or radical organisations were searched for no reason, without warrant. And eventually eight anarchists were arrested as basically saying they caused the disturbance in the Haymarket Square. Now, there was never any evidence that they had done this, and indeed the prosecutors in this trial said as much. That they said, well, whether these eight people are guilty or not is really irrelevant. They're just as guilty as anyone else who was there at Haymarket that day. So what these people should be convicted and punished as an example to the rest of the people in Chicago, or the rest of the people, you know, in America, Canada, or around the world involved in struggles, as an example, saying, well, if you're going to struggle, this is what's going to happen to you. So these eight people were tried and convicted of basically causing a riot, throwing bombs, whatever, at Haymarket that day. Seven of them were sentenced to death, and one was given a sentence of 15 years. In the lead up to their killing, I suppose, let's be blunt, let's not throw around euphemisms like executions or anything like that, two had their sentences commuted to a life sentence. One actually one upped the state by killing himself before they could do it, but the rest, remaining five, were hanged on the 11th of November 1887. So next time, you know, you're in school or something and your teacher says we should observe a minute's silence on the 11th of the 11th, well, there's a far greater reason that you should be observing a minute's silence for. Now, this obviously was not very well accepted amongst the radical movement, anarchist or otherwise. And basically, in 1889, the American delegation from the American Federation of Labour at the International Socialist Conference in Paris proposed that May the 1st be adopted as a workers' holiday around the world, and in 1890 it was in many countries. And from this day on, and not necessarily a state-endorsed holiday, it's just one that people take of their own volition, and it has remained very much the case since then in varying degrees of popularity. Certainly, I mean, the Soviet Union and other countries hijacked it quite badly as a display of their penis size in later years, with their parading their tanks and nuclear weapons through the streets. But pretty much May Day does, for a lot of people, remain a day of, remembrance of what happened in Chicago in 1886, and recognition of, you know, that struggle that happened there and a continuing struggle. I mean, the 8-hour day these days is something that a lot of people are having to win back. The 40-hour week is still normally held as the standard week, and we have here building workers in Victoria fighting for a 36-hour week, and many of them have won, and that's a very positive thing to happen. But a lot of people a 40-hour week would be a luxury, let alone a 36-hour week. So the significance of what happened on May the 1st back in 1886 should never be forgotten. Certainly what they fought for has unfortunately been forgotten in a lot of industries, and so something we're having to revisit. But nevertheless, still a very important date. Unfortunately, our modern-day union bureaucrats decide that we'll just do the nearest Saturday or Sunday beforehand, because maybe they don't want to remember the significance of May the 1st either, because they might lose some of their control over the union movements alike. Because we can remember that, yes, the strikes around May the 1st were called for by the Federation of Organised Trades and Labour Unions of the United States and Canada. But back then, that was a very different organisation to what the AFL has become today. But certainly, a lot of the strikes that happened were organised very much on a local level, and so it is an example that you know, people working together and fighting for common goals can do it. And you don't beg the bosses, you don't go begging the politicians, you just say, right, we're going to have an 8-hour day, we're going to have it from the 1st of May, 1886, and if you don't like it, well, then we're going to go on strike. They did, and many of them won the 8-hour day. They didn't win a 40-hour week, because the working week was still longer than 5 days, but the 8-hour day was certainly a very important industrial struggle, and one that we should, you know, be fighting to keep, not, you know, seeing how quickly we can give it away to our employers. But on May Day this year, there were some people still observing May 1st as the day to remember, and a few things. I mean, there were probably right around the world very smallish demonstrations or actions, events, with a couple of exceptions. We just might run through just a few of them. In Chicago, people still remember what happened there. About a couple of thousand people sort of disrupted the central business district, disrupting traffic, basically causing havoc to businesses around there. The police didn't take very kindly to that, unsurprisingly, and waded in to stop that. But in Chicago, they did remember what happened. In Helsinki, in Finland, 2,000 people held a street party in front of the local EU, European Union, representative's office, which has also happened to be next door to a five-star hotel. Now, the owner of the five-star hotel obviously didn't take too kindly to having 2,000 people playing loud music and dancing and having flashing lights and all sorts of other things disturbing his rich bludger guests' sleep or whatever. So he called the police. The police rocked up and saw what was going on, thought they were vastly outnumbered, decided to do nothing about it. But apparently a conservative parliamentarian, I think that's almost an oxy, it was almost tautology rather these days, rocked up and started got into a blue with a couple of people participating in the street party, and eventually the police ended up taking the parliamentarian away rather than the people who was having a blue whiz. So obviously police in Finland are obviously not very well trained if they do things like that. On the more politically sort of relevant things, Berlin in Germany has always been the centre for years and years and years. In fact, those who are old enough to remember when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States might remember some news footage from 1987 when he made a trip to Berlin on May Day, obviously trying to emulate one of his predecessors, and a warm acceptance by people in Berlin. Said he walked into a riot of grand proportions, people who were basically turned up with, as one of them said, you know, the idea of challenging the state monopoly on political violence and giving Reagan a holiday he'd never forget. And that sort of tradition has continued over the years, and this year was no exception. But unfortunately, in Germany, the fascist movement, neo-Nazi movement, has also taken May Day as a day that they would like to celebrate on too. And basically, the two, you know, the police did their best. The way I was starting that sentence sounded like I might be supporting the police, so I'll change tack there. But the police were given the task of keeping the anarchists and autonomous and communists and other sundry society scum, to quote John Howard, or to paraphrase John Howard, apart from the fascists. Didn't do a very good job. 200 police are apparently hurt in Berlin, which is something we're never sorry to hear. But if you're going to defend fascists, then that's basically what you might get. So in Berlin, at least, while the focus does often tend to be a bit on property destruction for the sake of property destruction, the Berlin one is probably one of the more politically motivated ones these days, which is good to see. In London, 12,000 people rocked up to the Parliament buildings, and apparently a few people did a bit of property smashing in central London, which we, you know, just for the sake of it, which again is pretty pointless. If it's going to have political violence, it should always be for a reason, not just for the sake, not just because you hate McDonald's or hate the Bank of England or whatever. On the local front, Sydney, 200 people in Martin Place, which is basically where the Parliament is, as well as a few other things. Basically, they wanted to picket Westpac because they didn't like some of the things Westpac do, which is a fairly understandable thing. Anyone said to deal with Westpac probably doesn't like things that Westpac do either. And they basically tried to picket there. The police waded in on their horses and basically disrupted that one pretty quickly. And in Melbourne, there was a small protest trying to picket the stock exchange. I've got to say, pretty fruitless thing. I don't know what you're trying to do. The sort of people who go to the stock exchange aren't the sort of people who are going to turn around overnight and say, well, yes, isn't capitalism a nasty thing? But I suppose some people are trying to do something. And in Canberra on Saturday, that's funny because I thought May Day was Monday, The pitiful Trades and Labour Council had about 100 people, you know, listening to what a terrible thing the Coalition's workplace relations thing is, amongst many other things. But, you know, really, April 29th is not May Day, so Jeremy, good try, but, you know, let's try for actually May Day next year. And let's not forget what it's about. Well, that's after my gratuitous slag off of the organised union bureaucrats in this country. We are running out of time. You are listening to Radio Freedom on Community Radio, 2XX 98.3 FM, Anarchy on the airwaves. Our Wanker of the Week award. Well, I have to give it to Peter Costello. He hasn't really said anything this week, not that I noticed anyway, that was particularly outrageous for him, but all those people he conned into buying shares in Telstra on the basis it would be an investment for their future and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's good to see they're now in the red on that investment, so good on you, Peter, and just goes to show, you know, people say that government-owned corporations, you know, that they can't run very well, they can't compete well. Telstra as a private organisation, yes, still partly government-owned, but as a private organisation, is doing its level best to show that private organisations can't look after themselves either. If you'd like to get in contact with us here at Radio Freedom for any reason whatsoever, you can write to us, care of PO Box 3859, Western Creek, ACT 2611. That's PO Box 3859, Western Creek, ACT 2611. Or you can email us at radiofreedom@hotmail.com. That's radiofreedom, all one word, @hotmail.com. Just a smidgen of time left. Joe Toscano earlier in the show was talking about the recent pay rises won by low-paid workers. And, of course, no doubt our good friend Mark Patterson from the Chamber of Commerce, he's extracted his head from his ass just long enough to speak a few words, although we didn't really notice the difference. And of course he's come out and said, oh, we can't afford to pay this. So I challenge any company, this is my second challenge, my first one of course is a $1,000 bet with any company. Bosses stay home for a week, and in the next week the employees stay home for a week, and if the output of that company is more while the bosses are at work and the workers are at home, I will pay any employer $1,000. My second challenge is to all these people who claim they can't afford to pay a pathetic pay rise of $15 a week, put your books on the table and prove you can't pay it. And if your books say that you can't pay it, then I'll give you, then I'll pay the $15 a week for a month for those employees in your company if you honestly reckon you can't afford it. And in putting together these books, executive salaries will not be counted as wages. Executive salaries will be counted as a business junket expense along with all the other sort of stuff. Okay, I'd just like to remind people, Community Radio 2XX is listener-funded through listener subscriptions. That's why programs like this...